You're listening to Repcast, the official podcast of San Diego Repertory Theater. This episode features Sam Salon, Standing on the Shoulders of a Giant. It was recorded live Thursday, March 17th at 7 p.m. before the 8 p.m. performance of R. Buckminster Fuller, The History and Mystery of the Universe.
Good evening, everyone. I'm Sam Windhouse. Welcome to Sam Salon. Thank you for negotiating the myriad levels of the world, like you're like a bucky hexagram and red man. Get over here, over the steps. We are in renovation, $3.2 million renovation of the lobby. It's going to take however many months it takes them. But by the end of the year, hopefully, we'll have a brand new lobby, $3.2 million in renovations. And work in this room as well. So, thank you for coming. I want to jump right in after I introduce two special people who are the sponsors of Sam Salon. After 7 years, we have two lovely friends who sponsor, and that's Susanna Lawrence Hess, who are right here. And I thank you both very much. Susanna's a librarian by trade, and so she's as curious as I am. I just discovered it. Which is really the root of this salon. You're about, are all of you seeing the show tonight? Everybody seeing the play tonight, brothers? Yeah, you're about to meet a guy who's the most curious soul I've ever met in my life. He's Buckminster Fuller. But my guess, let me put my glasses on, because this is the most impressive resume of any group I've ever had at Sam Salon in 7 years. So on the far left, first is Sheldon Brown. Is the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation Endowed Chair of Digital Media and Learning at UCSD, the director of the Arthur C. Clarke Center for Human Imagination, where he is a professor of visual arts and a co-founder of the California Institute of Telecommunications and Information Technologies. He's also the UCSD site director of the NSF-supported Industry University Collaborative Research Center for Hybrid Multicore Public Television Research. Wow, I couldn't even say that. And I'm an actor.
That's really impressive. You can read that bad scripts with such eloquence.
I won't even comment. That's just comment. Sitting next to Sheldon is Peter Meissen, who is the president of the Global Energy Network Institute, which conducts research and education on the interconnection of electric networks between nations, with an emphasis on tapping abundant renewable energy resources around the world. This is the Buckminster Fuller Premier Global Strategy from his World Game Simulation. Welcome, Peter. Thank you, Ben. So Peter's Bobby DePorter, who is president of Quantum Learning Network. He's an early pioneer in the field of accelerated learning and its applications for effective learning and teaching environments. In the late 70s, she co-founded a business school based on the generalized principles of Buckminster Fuller, who spoke at the first school in each year thereafter until his passing. Oh, that's wonderful. Well, how do you know that? Great. And next to me is Dr. Brian Keating, who is an experimental cosmologist with UC San Diego Center for Astrophysics and Space Sciences. Along with his team, Professor Keating builds telescopes that study the origin of the universe from far-flung locations such as the Chilean Atacama Desert and the South Pole, Antarctica. Welcome. Thank you all for coming. I'm going to leave now. That is amazing. Okay, so I think what I wanted to ask each of you to just speak for a moment about what you do, but more specifically how what you do was influenced by or inspired by or is connected about to the work, the writers, the thinking of Buckminster Fuller. I think that makes sense. Share with us where he is in your mind in terms of what you do. Brian, why don't we start with you?
Okay. What Fuller really represents to me is an inspiration as a professor. We're known for being long-winded, but there's an old joke about Bucky when he would give an 8-hour lecture. What would people call that? And they'd say that was him working 50% time, and that was a short lecture. So he actually gave some lectures that were 18 hours long. So that inspires me tonight to, no, we're not going to do that. It will be a test. But really, he was a polymath. I mean, he was the type of individual who could really attack any problem in an incredibly, you know, prescient fashion. I mean, he thought about things that were not just, you know, intellectually deep, but he was extremely broad. Everything from architecture, mathematics, cartography, and he was what I consider a Neoplatonist, in that he really looked at the world as being composed of fundamental objects. His favorite thing was a triangle, and from the triangle he realized quite accurately that he could represent and build up any structure that he wanted, including his famous geodesic dome. And I think it's very fitting that posthumously he was immortalized with the Buckminster fullerene, this incredible molecule of carbon, which we only thought existed in a few different forms, from diamond and certain organic compounds. It was found that you can actually make a compound, a molecule of carbon, that has 60 or 88 atoms in it. And this magical atom has just fantastic properties, very strange, quantum weird properties, superconductivity, other sorts of properties that he would have been so tickled with and delighted by. So he's really an inspiration for me as a scientist and quite a brilliant all-around intellect, a polymath.
Wow, that's great. Thank you, Bobby.
Well, like Theo said, look what needs to be done and then try your best to figure out how to do it the best way. And so just his commitment. I spent a lot of time with him over 7 years. Had really fortunate. I look back at that time. And just his presence, you felt different when you were around him. And the commitment. To think of somebody who committed at 100%. What does that mean to commit at 100% for the good of humanity? So I think about the influence that he has on that and that commitment. For that, because my passion is youth and learning, teaching and learning, and that's what I've committed my life to doing. One of the things that he said is the environment is stronger than will, and that when we teach, it's about creating the environment. I love it when he said, I would never try to reform people, that's much too difficult. You create the environment, and people transform themselves within that environment. So I work with school districts across the U.S. and have a youth program, which is quantum learning, and have a youth program called Super Camp, and we work with a lot of youth. And it is creating that environment that the students are there and they transform. At the end of the program, the closing ceremony, parents come up and talk to me. And I love it because this has happened so many times that I'm talking to a parent and one of the students will come up to me after the program so excited about what they learned and how they're going to be and what they're going to do. And the student walks away and the parent just looks at me and saying, I've been telling them that for years. And it's because we're creating an environment and the students are making discoveries themselves within that environment, and that's where the change happens. So that's really a big part of what I...
That's great. Thank you. Peter.
I grew up in Oceanside, and my dad was the vice president up in MiraCosta. And when I was a high school senior...
Speak louder, sir.
Just okay. Pull it closer. Pull it closer.
Mm-hmm. Closer?
That's there right. We call it swallowing the mic.
Okay.
Yeah.
Know that from my wife.
Yeah.
So I grew up in Oceanside, and my dad invited me to hear this guy speak. And he had never done that before, and this was Bucky at the MiraCosta College Auditorium, the packed house, and he did one of his many-hour lectures, a tour of the universe that you'll get an experience to this evening. And I was mesmerized, I was probably dumbfounded, and I had not a clue what he said. Other than I knew I was in the presence of a genius, and that it was important. Then, right before he died in 83, I was invited to a Hunger Project board meeting, and he was there for 30 minutes to talk, and I hung on every word. And somebody said, Bucky, what should we do? And he never told you directly, as Bobby said. He said, look and see what's wanted and needed. And if it's arousable in you, if it calls to you, then that's probably what you should be involved in. And he said, go read my last book. And it's called Critical Path. And just by the name of the book, you can imagine that that was a pretty important one. And there's a question in there, and there's this gaming simulation called the World Game. It's the opposite of war games. We all know what that is. But the World Game, it's a long statement. I'll say the whole thing and then shorten it. How do you make the world work for 100% of humanity in the shortest possible time through spontaneous cooperation without ecological damage or disadvantage to anyone? He was real precise in his words. The way you say it now, I would say, is how do you provide a decent living standard for everybody sustainably? So that's really the question. And I would take you through a Q&A, but the number one answer to that question is clean energy for everybody. For everybody. We have plenty of energy in here. Clearly, all of us are wealthy in that regard, but there's still 1.5 billion people that don't have any. And 80% of the world is still running fossil fuels. So there's people that need energy to get out of poverty. The rest of us are living well and causing the hottest year ever last year, the hottest month ever recorded last month. It's because of that fossil fuel use. So if you're going to actually solve this issue, you have to transition from how we generate and deliver electricity today to renewables. And so there's plenty of wind, solar, and geothermal on the planet. We want to link it up using high voltage transmission. That's the GENI initiative, the Global Energy Network Institute. And we've been working on that for 30 years. And I'm going to say the good news is out of the Paris Agreement in December, every single country signed on for making the transition to renewables by 2050. It's an 80% commitment by 2050, and it's not fast enough. That's the challenge. So it's incumbent on us to figure out how to move that date quickly. So that's the work for you.
Thank you, Peter. To those of you coming later, I almost said late, didn't I? But I didn't. I'm Sam Woodhouse. This is my salon. And my guests are four amazingly accomplished and distinguished people working in fields that you could say were partially inspired by the work of Buckminster Fuller. Their bios are astonishing. I don't have time to read them again. But trust me, so we're talking about Buckminster Fuller and how he impacts work that these wonderful geniuses are doing. Sheldon, would you speak to that, please?
Sure. So I think with Brian, Buckminster Fuller represents this certain inspiration and this ideal that that what you should do to contribute to the world isn't to find categories that you can plug yourself into, but it's to think about what your innate passions and talents are and redefine the kind of basic assumptions that we have that that seem to steer humans' relationship to the world around us and to humanity at large. And so with Fuller, what did Buckminster Fuller do? Was he a designer? Was he an architect? Was he a political theorist? Was he an ecologist? And if the answer is yes. And when you look at any of those things, they make sense because it was Fuller that was the connective tissue between all of those areas. Now, for someone coming along later, you might look at 12 different areas of human cultural activity and connect them through your own kind of engagements, because that's where your own expertise and passions lie. And you can make these kind of coherent interrelationships between these structures. And so Fuller is doing this in the mid-20th century at a time when when we've gone through this Enlightenment period and shown that the way to really gain knowledge is to further reduce and separate areas of human investigation, to isolate them all from each other. And then he comes back and says, no, the way we move forward to gain these ambitious goals that we should have for humanity about fairness, equality, and prosperity for all, which he claimed was really within our grasp and was only these old habits of humanity that were preventing us from attaining these goals. And so how do you do that? You have to radically redefine these kind of fundamental assumptions we have about things like up and down, that we're not up and down, we're going out or in. And that just that concept itself shows gives us the concept, the idea that we're all on this spaceship called planet Earth. And when we're all on a spaceship together, we realize we better get along with each other because the spaceship is a very fragile vessel. So he's able to take these the concepts from the triangle to the spaceship Earth and show that there's this way to kind of think about these things across these enormous levels of scale. So I think from that, he's, you know, inspired me to kind of be able to, you know, combine this kind of gobbledygook of different kinds of activities that I do myself, because underneath them there's a set of ideas, and I don't really care about any of those kind of titles or roles, but the kind of underlying ethics and concepts that I'm kind of pursuing as a creative practitioner in the world.
Thank you, Sheldon. Thank you. This may be a little, I don't know if this is going on. Yeah, there we go. This may be a little self-serving because maybe, you know, for many years now we've been saying that San Diego Rep feeds the curious soul. But I figured with these distinguished guests, I could ask them, what is a curious soul? And maybe think it's essential to the evolution of our species. Would any of you care to answer those questions?
I have an example of just a curious soul with being with Bucky. That okay. I was in a car driving out to Ramona, actually, and he was just so curious looking out the window. But I always thought, he always asked, and I kept asking about the rock formations and these very unique rock formations. And I thought, I've driven by these year after year after year, never even noticed them. And just that realization of just everything was awe and wonder. Very childlike in that way, of mm-hmm. awe and wonder and asking questions about everything.
Mm-hmm. Brian?
Yeah, he used to say that one of the things that inspired him the most was that people would say so many things were impossible. And they would say, man will never drive up, have a car, never have the ability to fly, never go to the moon, never reach the South Pole, never reach the North Pole. And he saw all these things happen in his lifetime. He lived in a remarkable 100-year span. And I think that taught him, you know, there's a famous experimental physicist like myself, near him, Michelson, who said, you know, in what separates a scientist, you know, from a person who has lost that curiosity that I think we're all born with, is that a scientist remains a child. The child, you give them a puzzle, I have a 5-year-old, and, you know, he'll solve the same jigsaw puzzle, you know, 100 times, because each time he gets that last bit of satisfaction that's so pleasurable. And I always say we're so fortunate we get paid by you folks, the scientists working at public universities, we get paid to experiment and solve puzzles and play games. And that's what he was known for. And that's what's so, I think that's what is a unique and identifying characteristic of minds like his. And I think you see that nowadays with people like Elon Musk and other people that are just innovators, and they're driven by this childlike curiosity.
You know, there's another profession that gets paid to act childish. We don't get as much as you do for doing it, but that's what we do here in the theaters. Let our inner child run wild. And you will actually see that tonight, actually. Right, Peter? You will see that happening tonight in the performance. Sheldon, do you want to comment on my question?
Well, there's an aspect of curiosity which... maybe two aspects of it. So one is the willingness to be able to kind of leave certain presumptions you have behind. You've got an openness to kind of changing your own opinions about an aspect of your reality framework that you have. But another is, I think, also as important is an intellectual generosity for the ideas of others. And so to be able to engage in that... collaborative, empathetic relationship to others and their ideas.
It's wonderful. I should say this because I think you'll enjoy this. I just saw this before this salon started. KPBS has made a 4-minute video of our production, which you can see online when you go home tonight if you see the show. But I urge you to see it because there are clips from Buster Keaton and other silent film clowns, and there are clips from the circus. The actor you're about to see, Ron Campbell, from Cirque du Soleil, where he performed, as well as quite a bit of video of Bucky himself ruminating and thinking, and you can see this childlike and this curiosity just sort of vibrant in his face. Anyway, it's on your computer tonight when you go home. And Peter, do you care to comment on that?
Tell me
about curiosity.
Yeah, for me, what I've observed is that I've gotten to a state in my life where I kind of like the way things are. You know, we all get comfortable. And clearly what I've seen in the 30 years with what I've been doing is technology continues to improve, get smaller, get faster, using less energy, less resources, that the natural course of our lives, of business, is, and it's called federalization, doing more with less, you'll hear that again, and that unless you really just want to live in the stasis of where you're at, the natural course of our lives is change. And to be open to that reality, to be curious about what's coming forward. In my own work, there's the solar panels that you have on your roof are getting more efficient, less costly. It just makes more and more sense all the time. What used to be impossible in terms of a car, you know, that you had to put gasoline in, you don't have to do that anymore, and now they're going further and further on electricity. It's just change is a part of our lives, and I love that. I finally got very comfortable in it, and just being aware that that's always going to be with us.
You know, one of the great debates in our profession is where does this progression of, and this movement of increasingly efficient technology, how does it impact the live theater experience? Where is it helpful and where does it take away from the immediacy of me standing here talking to you? I'm really here. I might fall off the stage. And there's no technology involved here. It's an ongoing debate in my industry, just as a sidebar. Okay, so Mr. Fuller said that he had a treatise. He wrote Utopia or Oblivion, in which he included a list of 40 questions that must be answered before any other discussion took place. One of the most interesting questions to me is the one that I'd like to pose to each of you. Has mankind a function in the universe? Has mankind a function in the universe? Who would like to answer that question? Peter.
Yes. Man answered us all problems. Taking it away from the place, we're here to be problem solvers. We're information gatherers and problem solvers, and that's our reason for being, is to solve problems, and then as soon as we solve one, there's going to be another one or a bigger one. As soon as you get good at solving bigger problems, someone's going to give you another challenge. So that's part of our reason for being here, is to be better and better at solving problems.
Good. Sheldon?
Well, you know, I guess if you could ask that question, you could ask, does a star have a purpose in the universe? You know, so I think, you know, one thing about man and about humans is that we are the most organized phenomena that we know of that exists in the universe.
We're the most organized
phenomena? Organized. We're the most, yes, we're the most structured. You know, so if you look at the, and maybe I should defer to the cosmologists for the kind of the explanation of the phenomenon of organization, but you know, the brain is the most complex phenomenon that we're aware of. So if there's this line of against the entropy of the universe, which is what information is, then the ultimate expression of that we know of is us. And so in a way, if the universe has a purpose, then we're inherently bound up in it in some way. But this is what was interesting about Fuller, is that he was these kind of contradictions in how he would pursue these large concepts and topics.
Yeah.
So that's a very, you know, it's a very theological way to ask that question, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he would constantly put these conceptual structures in kind of contention with each other, and as a very productive method of tapping into people's imagination and curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Bobby, did you want to comment?
On the line of fear, it was, like they had said, that we have powerful minds to solve difficult problems, and it's all about trial and error. And when we work with students, we always teach them, it's like, to look at it as, what happened, what did you learn, what will you do differently next time?
So. That's what we do in notes after the performances as well. Brian, did you want to comment on that?
Yeah, I was thinking about that question while others were discussing it. It reminded me of a quote by David Gross, who won the 2004 Nobel Prize in Physics. He said, he was asked, do physicists need philosophers? And he said, yes, in the same way that birds need ornithologists.
I think we got it.
Yeah.
Right, so, I was going to say, like, a woman needs a man like a fish needs a bicycle, but I think that even takes
Let me get a drum set out.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Here for the next 10 seconds.
Yeah.
So I would say that, you know, there seems to be, you know, if you think cosmically, a famous physicist, a friend of mine, Lawrence Krauss, said, you know, we're basically cosmic pollution. But then, you know, meaning that the elements that comprise us were in the interiors of vast solar systems that exploded in supernova, just fascinating phenomenon. And I think that, you know, that's kind of a bleak way to look at it. And,
yeah.
and I think
yeah.
along the way that Peter said, maybe just amplifying what he said, which is that, you know, if we do have a purpose, it seems like it would be to live the most ethical lives that we could live in possibility, and I mean, fairness to all, and respecting each other. And I think, even as a scientist, what drives us is, and what is a passion enhancement for me, is that, you know, science is sort of, we have the luxury of not having to worry about those problems. We get to play these games that I described before. And it's just fascinating to see how we can use technology. I mean, no one ever said, everybody hates politicians, and nobody ever got to say, I hate technology, you know, something. But you know, I hate iPhones. You hate them in certain ways, but you also are addicted to them and love them. So I think technology has a high purpose, and it's to serve people, treat people ethically, and I think that would be, you know, a good description as we can have of mankind's purpose in society and the universe.
You know, I think one of the great things about my job is that I can actually ask the question from by Mr. Fuller, does mankind have a purpose in the universe? It's a joy. We're going to have to wrap it up in a moment because we have a show at 8, and we want to give you a chance to have a break and perhaps chat with some of the guests. I'm going to ask one more question in a moment. I'll tell you what it is now, and then I'll talk about next salon. The question is, if you could ask Bucky a question, what would it be? So that's what I'm asking you to wrap up in a second. But I'll do a small commercial for the next Sam Salon, which I'm supposed to know the date of, and it's going to be in April on Thursday night. And the next play we're doing is called Rapture, Blister, Burn, not this play, tonight, but the next one. And it's a play about feminism. So I'm gathering a panel of very vocal and inspired and somewhat provocative people to speak about feminism. So if you're interested in that, please join me. Tonight is Mr. Fuller, The History and Mystery of the Universe. You probably know, but if you don't, what you're about to see was originated here at San Diego Rep in 2000, the year 2000, by the man who you see performing it tonight, Ron Campbell, written and directed by D.W. Jacobs, who co-founded San Diego Rep with me in 1976. And this play, which began in 2000, went on to be performed in San Francisco, Seattle, Chicago, Boston, Washington, D.C., and...
Was it done in New York?
No, not done in New York. And is the most successful world premiere we ever created in San Diego Rep. So I'm really glad you're here to see this work we're very proud of. And to close tonight's conversation, I would like, first of all, just let me thank you, Brian Keating, for being with us, and Bobby DePorter, I want to say that right? Bobby DePorter, yes. And Peter Meissen and Sheldon Brown. And if you had a question you could ask Bucky, what would it be? Shall we start with you?
I guess I'd ask him, where do you want to go for dinner?
Okay. And then you should ask me, because I know all the restaurants around here. I've been here for 30 years. So. Good, sure. Bobby.
Well, thinking about it is that a question comes to mind, and then... an answer from Bucky comes
sure,
right up. You
sure.
know, so one of them is, my world is education and teaching and learning, so I think about what would be a trim tab for education,
mm-hmm.
what would that be for the change, and then the answer comes up, it's, you know, that you free the mind of the students, and rather than pouring in knowledge from somebody else, and it's just that curiosity again, that's what's needed, is to free the mind.
Brian?
I wouldn't ask him about anything scientific because he so thoroughly documented his scientific doctrines, it would be unnecessary. But I would ask him a personal question. How did he, for most of his career, he wasn't
as widely respected as he is posthumously, and I asked him how he handled that, how he, as a man, as a human being, how did he handle, there's some derision, and yeah. only in retrospect did we realize you know, the full capacity of his genius.
Yeah, yeah. And Peter?
Another project that we're working on is something called the World Resource Simulation Center, and I'll say Sim Center from here on. The biggest dome that was ever built was in Montreal for the 1967 World's Fair, and that was our U.S. pavilion. And he had intended to put this this great questioning facility, essentially the world game played all the time, in that facility, so that we would work on the hardest problems of our day. And I believe the U.S. State Department wasn't quite clear what he wanted to do, and they put in Americana and cars and washing machines and stuff. And so we're still doing that. It's our version of it as a prototype is just a block up the road from here, and we're wanting to take it to the next level. So my question is, how do we get it into something of that scale, that full scale?
Great. Thank you very much for being my guest. Thank you all for coming. I really appreciate all of you who've come to the Salon for many years and share the curiosity that I do about this city and the amazing people that live and work here. And tonight's show starts at 8. Unfortunately, the only restrooms that are currently functioning are upstairs. But the elevator works, so you can go off the floor, you can walk up and come back. The concession stand is also upstairs. Or you can just hang out here. Please do sit in the seat that's on your ticket. That would make life easier when we start at 8. Thank you so much, everybody. Thanks for coming. Thank you all.
You've been listening to Repcast, the official podcast of San Diego Repertory Theater. Please visit sdrep.org on the web for more information about the remaining performances in our spectacular 40th season and a preview of what's to come in our 41st season. San Diego Repertory Theater produces intimate, exotic, provocative theater. We promote a more inclusive community through vivid works that nourish progressive, political, and social values and celebrate multiple voices of our region. San Diego Repertory Theater feeds the curious soul.